Toronto is known as a safe and welcoming place. A home away from home for people all over the world. But sometimes, it's just another big city where newcomers can be in danger more than they could possibly imagine. Investigation and conviction may take years. But every detective knows that the crucial clue is always there, somewhere in the first 72 hours. Detectives are called to an apartment building in Toronto's North End.
The information that I had was that there were two sisters who had been brutally stabbed. There was blood everywhere in the apartment. There were pieces of broken furniture there as well. It was very clear that there had been an extremely violent struggle.
It was the most violent and bloody crime scene that I had seen in my tenure in the office.
Friends of the family identify the victims as Tina and Teresa Wu, two sisters who are students visiting from Taiwan. The friends live close by. They've been keeping an eye on the girls. Earlier this evening, they say they received a frantic call.
The call display indicated that the call was coming from the girls' apartment, but they could only hear screaming and moaning in the background.
They rushed over to find the sisters barely alive. They go to the hospital to be with the girls.
And in multiple stabbing cases, we always hope that the attacker is somehow cut themselves when they're trying to control a struggling victim. So we look for passive blood drops that might be from our attacker rather than from the girls.
By the open basement window, the detectives find what they are looking for.
There was one single droplet of blood on top of the sofa.
Police suspect the blood came from the attacker when he left through the window. They send it to the lab for testing. Was this a robbery gone wrong? Giroux and Como don't think so.
Traditionally, if it was a standard break and enter into an apartment, these individuals don't want to get caught. They don't want anybody to be home.
The attacker would have been able to see the younger sister asleep on the sofa, and when he looked through the window looking for a victim, that's what he would have seen, and that's what drew him into the apartment. He just had that horrible feeling that you were dealing with a sexual predator.
18-year-old Tina Wu dies on the operating table. Somehow, her 14-year-old sister, Teresa, survives.
Thankfully, she lived because her injuries were so serious. She could easily have died, and it could have been a double homicide.
She had an abdominal stab wound and numerous defensive wounds on her hands and arms to the point where her fingers were almost severed.
There are no signs of a sexual assault, which leaves the detectives wondering what really happened.
We were hoping that she was going to be able to provide us with a description of her attacker. Unfortunately, the best that she was able to remember was that when she awoke from a sleep on the sofa, she remembers seeing a dark shadow of a figure standing there above her. And then didn't remember anything after that.
Teresa may never be able to remember what happened to her.
She was only 14 years of age and had gone through this, you know, horrible trauma of being attacked and then watching her sister be murdered right in front of her.
the detectives turned to the family friends for help.
One of the things we wanted to look at right away is who did the sisters know here in Toronto that may have been responsible for this crime? Did they have any boyfriends that they were having problems with? Was there anyone that they were dating?
Police learned the girls knew very few people in the city.
They were very, very reserved. They were not interested in boys or dating. These were very, very traditional girls. Extremely bright, straight-A students, scholarship type of material.
The older sister, Tina, came from a very prestigious university in Taiwan called the Taiwan National University, which is like Harvard. She had a brilliant future ahead of her. And Teresa, she was quite a good pianist. And she really looked up to her older sister.
Both the girls had led a very quiet life. Primarily, they, you know, studied and spent time together, quiet time together.
Their lifestyle just led me to believe that it was a stranger upon stranger attack.
Stranger on stranger attacks are among the most difficult crimes to solve. The attacker could be anyone. Police spend the next several days interviewing possible witnesses.
We made sure that each and every resident was canvassed immediately in the hopes that they'd seen anything that could help us solve this case.
They finally get what could be a promising lead. A young couple who lives in the Wu sisters' building say that on the night of the murder, they came home about 2:30 a.m.
When they arrived, their parking space that they normally parked in, there was another vehicle in that spot.
When they checked again at 3:30 a.m., they found the vehicle, a faded black Mazda minivan, was gone. Police can now place a strange vehicle at the scene of the crime, but they don't know what to make of it.
I had no idea whether or not it had anything to do with the murder. You know, people park in each other's spots, they're visiting people, they put their car in the wrong place.
72 hours into the investigation, police have the report of a Mazda, a drop of blood, and no suspects. But then, the lab completes its analysis of the blood found by the apartment window.
And it was determined to be male blood.
Which meant it must have come from Tina Wu's killer. The biologist runs the DNA profile through the lab's data bank. No name comes up. But the profile does match other DNA evidence gathered at the scene of a sexual assault that occurred months before. That case remains unsolved. The detectives now realize their original suspicion was correct. They are looking for a sexual predator who has taken the next step.
Knowing that you have a serial offender out there who has escalated to the level of murder, it adds that extra urgency to the investigation to get it solved as quickly as possible and catch this guy before he can do the same thing to another woman again.
Police now know the Wu sisters' attacker is responsible for at least one other sexual assault. That assault took place in the same neighborhood where the sisters were living. When they speak with the victim, they find other similarities as well.
The sexual assault that took place, again, is a very frightening scenario. It was an Asian woman alone in her home.
When the victim awoke, she saw the attacker standing there with this pillowcase as a mask and a hood and holding the knife. And he demands from her that he wants sex.
After he committed his assault, the attacker took some money and fled, but not before leaving his semen behind.
Once she'd realized he was gone, police were called and they arrived immediately to provide some help.
As a result of the woman's report,
Police realize they are looking for a sexual predator who seems to have a preference for a certain kind of victim.
A lot of Asian women are reluctant to report crimes of this nature because of there's a stigma attached. So when she rose up and reported the crime, she didn't do it for herself. She did it to help other women.
Police now warn the public about the attacker. The Asian community takes the news particularly hard.
The notices said that he was targeting Asian women. And as a Taiwanese woman, I was a target. And my sisters were targets. And we lived directly in the vicinity of these assaults. And we were just afraid to go out. Everybody was afraid.
Detectives Como, Giroux, and the rest of their team scour police files for other sexual assaults on Asian women. Their search pays off. They find a third case that matches the predator's pattern. 6 months ago, an Asian woman living in the Wu sisters' neighborhood was also attacked by a masked man with a knife.
Her attacker came in through the door and just brutally started assaulting her, punching her and beating her to the point where she needed plastic surgery. He pulled out a knife. He told her to take all her clothes off. The victim was, you know, thinking very clearly and trying to protect herself. While she was pleading with him not to kill her, she was offering him valuables to just leave.
These actions helped the woman save her own life. A neighbor who saw the man enter the house arrived in time to scare him off. Detective Como believes it's the same man who attacked Tina and Teresa Wu. He then comes across some information that convinces him of it.
There was a supplementary report for a man who'd been walking his dog in the area. And he saw parked beside the house was a dark Mazda MPV minivan.
It's the second time a dark Mazda minivan has come up in the investigation.
I felt very strongly that this was the suspect vehicle.
Como asked for a report of every incident involving a dark Mazda minivan.
And they were able to provide me with a printout. It was actually quite startling. About 12 pages of individuals who had been investigated by police in the city of Toronto while driving a dark-colored Mazda MPV minivan.
Como knows the interviews will take time. But with a serial predator at large, time is one thing he and Giroux don't have. They decide to step up their surveillance of the neighborhood surrounding the crime scenes. 5 weeks after Tina Wu's murder, something catches the surveillance team's eye.
They look over and they see an older model black Mazda MPV minivan.
It's a long shot, but the detectives radio ahead to have a uniformed officer pull the vehicle over. When police check the driver's identity and his home address, they realize they're onto something.
It was the same street as the two attacks leading up to the murder.
The man's name is Stuart Cameron. He has no idea he has just become the prime suspect in the murder of Tina Wu.
I requested immediate 24-hour, 7-day-a-week surveillance, on Stuart Cameron.
The detectives discover Cameron is married to an Asian woman and has two young children. He also appears to be a devoted family man.
During the time that we had him under surveillance, Stuart Cameron would take his children to school. He would drive over to his parents' place and do some of his errands. Most of the time, it was just regular routine stuff.
Police hope he will leave something behind that can be analyzed for DNA. But over 3 days, they have no luck. Late one night, Cameron goes out alone. The detectives follow him. They see him emerge from a nightclub with a woman by his side. She may not be Asian, but there's still cause for concern.
Has he just met this woman? Is it somebody he's going to attack? Obviously, we have to do everything possible to protect her.
The last thing police want is another victim. Police believe they are closing in on Tina Wu's killer. But they need his DNA to prove their case. Now they follow him as he takes a woman to an isolated location.
They went and parked in behind a factory. It was, clear that they were going to have sex in his van. I was extremely worried that he might reoffend, and I asked the surveillance officers, I say, you've got to be close enough that if you hear any kind of attack going on at all, that, we can intervene immediately to save this woman.
Police listen in, but there's no sign the woman is in danger.
Our surveillance officer saw Cameron get out of the van and then drop something on the ground. It was a tissue that he had used to wipe himself off after having sex with this woman.
It could be the break police have been waiting for. Como sends the sample to the lab for DNA testing.
We were all on pins and needles waiting for that phone call to tell us whether it was going to be a match.
Como gets his answer.
It was one of the best telephone calls I've ever received in my life. It just felt so satisfying to know that we had him.
The first thing Como does is call Gary Giroux.
I can remember that call to this day. He just called me and he goes, "It's him." And I said, I could still remember the hair on the back of my neck standing on end.
40 days after Tina Wu's murder, police arrest Stuart Cameron.
I remember he had a very smug kind of look on his face, and I thought it doesn't fit with a person who's being arrested for murder. But he was certainly a strange individual, to say the least.
When I heard the name Stuart Cameron, I was completely shocked. I had gone to school with a Stuart Cameron. My sisters were in the same class as him. He was very popular, very well-liked. He was a gentle, quiet guy. I wanted to try to understand what would make him do this, and I couldn't find anything. You would never know what lurked inside. You would just never know.
When the detectives interview Cameron at police headquarters, he admits going to the Wu sisters' apartment as well as the homes of the other victims. But he says he had no intention of assaulting anyone.
He indicated that he was basically a thief and not a sexual offender, and I didn't believe that. He was a serial sexual offender that had gone on to commit murder, and yet was living a Jekyll and Hyde existence. Conducted himself normally during the day, committed violent sexual offenses at night.
Looking at the attacks that we know he's responsible for, he was going after Asian women who were home alone and demanding sex at knife point. It doesn't get any clearer than that about how this guy operates.
Police now believe they know what happened to the Wu sisters.
He had identified these girls. He had seen them in the community. He knew that they were living alone. He knew where they lived.
Cameron was fully prepared when he went to their apartment that night.
He had a sexual assault kit, he had a weapon, and he had a mask with him. And he went there specifically to that apartment for a sexual purpose, and that was the sole purpose. The youngest of the two girls was asleep on the couch, and he could see her through the open curtains. He's able to fit through this narrow opening, and then he confronts the sleeping victim.
However, Cameron's plan to rape Teresa Wu did not go as planned.
He was prevented from doing a sexual assault in this case because the older sister had heard him. She came out immediately.
She drew the attention away from her younger sister onto herself. And as a result of it, she died.
Cameron left both girls for dead. The drop of blood detectives found in the first 72 hours of their investigation proved beyond a doubt that Stuart Cameron was the one who killed Tina Wu.
When I wrote the article, I remember crying as I was typing and having to stop. That she came out and gave her own life to save her sister.
Certainly, she was very heroic in what she was able to accomplish. Her younger sister lived, and she drove the attacker off, so she succeeded.
Stuart Cameron received two life sentences, one for the attempted murder of Teresa Wu, and one for the murder of Tina Wu. The stories on 72 Hours are true. The detectives and forensic scientists are the ones who actually worked on the case.